Hi, welcome. Welcome to day one of the UBS Healthcare Conference. My name is Dan Brennan. I'm the new Life Science Tools and Diagnostics Analyst here. Pleased to be joined on stage with the senior management team of Fluidigm. To my left, Vikram Jog, CFO, and to his left, Agnes Lee, the new VP of Investor Relations. I thought Vikram's gonna start off and make some opening comments. I have a list of questions. Obviously, through your app, you can submit questions to me. I'll take a glance down a few times during the presentation and try to get to those. So without further ado, Vikram?
Thanks, Dan, and thank you for inviting us to our conference. Really glad to be here. Fluidigm is a life science tools company that develops, manufactures, and markets instrument systems and related consumables in two distinct technologies: mass cytometry and microfluidics. Our systems are used for very diverse applications, ranging from the characterization and monitoring of the human immune system, drug and biomarker discovery, the marker-assisted breeding in ag-bio applications, and human cell atlasing. And our products address very large markets. Mass cytometry has a market opportunity of approximately $600 million. And then on the genomic side, our market opportunity is $870 million. And we are positioning ourselves for sustainable growth driven by increasing demand for high-parameter analysis, and are executing a strategy that leverages our unique capabilities in the field of high-parameter analysis and the new research paradigm that is developing in this area. And we are serving a customer base that is significant, diverse, and growing. And across our two businesses, mass cytometry is continuing to gain momentum based on its disruptive technology that is becoming increasingly integral to immuno-oncology, immunology writ large, and then cancer immunotherapy. And then our genomics business offers very highly scalable and cost-effective technology for uses in genotyping, gene expression, and next-generation library preparation. And we have an attractive business model with a large installed base of instruments and growing recurring revenues consisting of consumables and service. And we continue to develop a pipeline focused on workflow, content, and software. And finally, we have a focus on operational efficiency and financial discipline. Last year, we significantly reduced both our OpEx and our cash burn.
Terrific. Well, thanks for that, Vikram. So Chris joined, your new CEO joined about in October 2016, so about a year and a half ago at this point. So maybe you could reflect on kind of what's gone well, what has, you know, maybe what's been more challenging as he's been trying to implement along with yourself, obviously, some new strategies and direction for the company.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think some of them are already manifest in our results over the last year or so. He joined, as you said, in the fall of 2016. So 2017 has been a year in which we have implemented a lot of the changes that Chris put in place. I referred to a focus on operational efficiency and financial discipline. So we have made a lot of changes and a lot of progress implementing a very strong infrastructure and foundation. You can see from our hires, we have had key hires in the areas of information technology, process excellence, and most recently, a head of operations, a position that we didn't have. But on the business side, we are now focused squarely, as I said in my opening remarks, on content, workflow, and software. Fluidigm was a company that was very prolific in innovating and putting new instruments on the market. But now we are leveraging that installed base, as I said, by developing an ecosystem of content. And the other major change we made is we had a go-it-alone ethos in the company, and we are focused on not necessarily doing everything ourselves. We have gone to partners where that makes sense. The ones that we have publicly talked about is a partnership in China with a company called Ascendus Genomics that has the potential of taking our genomics instruments through the Chinese FDA and establishing a microfluidics-based diagnostic. Another example of that is the licensing of the CFTR assay from Baylor Genetics. And then the other thing that we did is we combined our sales forces that had previously been split between the research and applied groups. And that is, again, it turned out that we did lack the heft and the financial volume to really have a divided sales force. So I think that's a pretty good description of the types of changes we have effected over the last year or so.
Great. And I know the company, you know, when you guide throughout the year, you'll look one quarter out, and I mean, I'm certainly familiar with Fluidigm, but I'm not quite sure if you've ever, under Chris, laid out with the assets you have in place today and the changes, kind of what you think kind of a normalized growth profile is for the company. I know the revenues have been declining, but the rate of decline has kind of moderated. It's almost flat, you know, it was almost flat year over year in 17 versus 16. So how should we think about the profile today of the business that you have going forward?
Yeah, so we haven't provided annual guidance since about the fall of 2016. I think one of our primary objectives was to regain the credibility with the marketplace. But there are multiple ways of thinking through the growth profile of the company without providing specific guidance. One is the markets that we are addressing. I talked about the mass cytometry market and the broader genomics market. If you look at those markets overall, so for example, an analog of the mass cytometry market is the larger flow cytometry market, which is growing in the mid-single digits. But if you stratify that market by the numbers of parameters that the companies that play in that space target, by low parameters, say a handful to the teens and then the high teens. As you go up that parameter stratification, the market at the highest end of that is growing at about three times the overall rate. So number one, I would say that in the mass cytometry space for sure, we are targeting a market segment that's growing at a very rapid pace relative to the overall market. Then you look at our results for 2017, again, sticking to mass cytometry, that business grew about 38% year over year from 16 to 17. And then the other way to think about our potential growth is the strategy that we've outlined for ourselves not to be overly reliant on instrument placement, and this is especially true of genomics, but to focus on the consumables. And if you look at our consumables performance, even in 17 when we were experiencing very great headwinds and the genomics, and I might add here that primarily those headwinds were related to single-cell business. The headwind, again, for consumables was significantly lower. And then on the high-throughput genomics portion of the genomics business, we actually started growing in the mid-teens from Q2 of 2017. So hopefully that gives you a good picture on what our growth profile could be, given the markets that we're targeting and the specific strategies on the consumables and recurring revenue side that we have.
Great, yeah, thank you. And maybe we could just dig in a little bit on mass cytometry. Obviously, as you just mentioned, you're playing at the high end of the market in terms of the, you know, kind of the number of targets. You know, what are some of the key attributes of your platforms that you're addressing that maybe isn't out there today from the competitive landscape? And you know, who are you basically competing with when you go in to win business?
Yeah, so I've mentioned high parameters a number of times, so it might be worthwhile giving a background as to why that's important. What's going on right now in the area of cancer therapy in particular is a very exciting application of the body's own immune system as a means of fighting cancer compared to previous methods of chemotherapy and radiation and whatnot. And as that has progressed, it's turned out that the immune system is actually a mediator in a number of diseases that were never heretofore regarded as autoimmune diseases, all the way from arthritis to stroke and cardiovascular disease and so on and so forth, mediated by the inflammation response, which of course, as we know, is really an immune-mediated response. So, and then as that has developed, we are asking ourselves questions that we were never asking. For example, why do cancer cells evade the immune system? What kind of cells and pathways should we target? When you look at drug development, we need to understand what the mechanism of action is. Would a compound therapy be better than individualized therapy? What drug should be given first and second? And then finally, what's the prognosis? What kind of biomarkers would aid in prognosis? and so forth. And the inexorable rise in the number of biomarkers is really providing a point of confluence between the capabilities that the Fluidigm system has of high-parameter testing. And that is really the underpinning of why we believe we are in the right place at the right time, that the number of biomarkers keep expanding. The existing technologies that are based on optics suffer from spectral overlap, meaning that if you increase the number of parameters that you seek to assay in one experiment, you're going to have a lot of wavelength. And that can be solved, but it takes a lot of time. And then if you want to change a particular antibody in a panel of, say, 30 or 40 antibodies, which are very difficult to do in optical systems, to optimize that ensuing panel takes a lot of time and complexity. So for all of those reasons, we believe that the immune system being a key system in all of those diseases that I talked about, the resulting increase in the number of biomarkers is really a perfect match for the technologies that we offer. And on the genomic side, similarly, because of the high throughput nature of our technology, it makes it more scalable. Because as the number of biomarkers expand, cost becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so we feel that our technology can then transcend all of the limitations of optical technology and provide it at a cost that would become affordable. So that is really the characteristic of the mass cytometry business.
So when,
that you were asking about, I think.
So when a customer chooses one of your products, what are they moving out of their lab to put your product in, and who else is showing up at that final, you know, pitch stage when they're deciding upon whether to, you know, implement one of your products?
Yeah, I'm not sure they're moving anything out. I mean, you can still do. They're not going to buy a Fluidigm system if they just want to do a handful of. So, for example, for sorting right now, it's just it's they're not going to spend.
Right.
The kind of money that they'd have to spend for a mass cytometer. So for flow sorting, they're still going to use existing technology. It is possible to do everything that the mass cytometer does with flow. You're just going to have to take a lot longer. You're going to have multiple experiments. It's going to take you a lot longer to optimize and simplify your samples.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is competition out in the market, but I think what we see is that all the players, all the established players, recognize the need, and each of them advertise a particular product that seeks to assay a higher number of parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we believe that given our technology, which is based on detecting the atomic mass of metals and not relying on optics, still provides a far superior solution.
Mm-hmm. And is it in terms of, is it the number of the parameters, and is it as well the analytical performance of assessing those parameters? Just discuss where you are today, and is it just pushing the envelope on both of those planes? Is that what, and I'm sure there's a lot more to it, but is that what necessarily drives the high end of the market, or just maybe discuss the competitive profile of whether it be parameters or analytical performance?
Yeah. So right now we have a theoretical capacity of well over 100.
Mm-hmm.
Just from a hardware perspective. But the number of antibodies that are being used in practice are somewhere between 40 and 50.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at just a few years ago, before mass cytometry became more prevalent, we are talking about a handful, literally a handful. And if in the hands of a skilled operator, you could maybe go to two handfuls, but that was kind of the limitation. And to a large extent, that is still the limits of optical technology.
Mm-hmm.
Except in the hands of very expert operators.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we were discussing in the hallway coming in, maybe discuss a little bit about how the mass cytometry product is being used for, like, immune profiling. Is it being used on the research translational side? Will it also be a product that is used actually on the clinical side? And, you know, kind of where does it fit in? Because there's a lot of companies going after this space. So is it going to be complementary to other products? And I'm sure, as you mentioned, it could take a lengthy discussion to get a real answer to this question. But nonetheless, I'd be interested if you can kind of give a simplified view.
Yeah. Right now, I think it's used in research and translational. We have examples of research departments or research functions within pharma, biopharma. Some examples of CROs using. And then on the imaging side, which we haven't talked about so much so far, we are seeing uses in imaging and flow cores. for the imaging portion of the mass cytometry technology. Of course, that's a much more recently launched product.
Okay. Maybe can you let's step back before we move over to genomics a little bit. Could you just discuss, like, the big picture? Like, I think you laid out what the size of the market is during the introductory comments, but, like, where can this product go? It has a tremendous utility in a variety of different areas. But if we look out over the next 3 to 5 years, is there a placement target that could be achieved? Is there an addressable market, like, looking out? Because I think what you discussed today maybe might have been more of a static view of, you know, the kind of size of the market today. So I'm just wondering if you can kind of put on a visionary hat.
Yeah, well, of course, it's a function of the size of the market today and the growth rates, and we talked a little bit about that. The growth rates that we are seeing in the high parameter side are in the mid to high teens. So if you look at the existing $500 million market growing at high teens, it can, you know, double every 3 or 4 or 5 years. But that's just a mathematical construct. The important thing is the way we see this market developing. So this started way back in, say, 2010, 2011, and the first 3 years were really just methods development, and then I would say a phase from 13 to 17 was reducing those methods to practice. And the phase we find ourselves in right now, say between, say, 18 and the next 2 or 3 years, is just continuous application expansion. And then if this becomes as we think it's going to become, then in, say, the next 4 or 5 years or so, it becomes routine. That is really where we envision this technology going. And so routine testing means that the, just like now we're not there quite here where few years ago when the human genome was a thing that everybody's going to carry a genome in their pockets, it's quite conceivable that immune profiling will become a thing. But of course, immune profiling is a lot more complicated than just sequencing somebody's genome and carrying it in your wallet, so to speak. But routine use is that everybody will have their immune system profiled or characterized, albeit it'll have to be constricted in some way, shape, or form. But then the downstream effects of that would be that there would be some kind of clinical tests related to the immune system, because the immune system is dynamic and it mediates not just disease states but also healthy states. So if it does become routine, then this could become a very sizable business opportunity for us.
Okay, great. Let's hop over to the genomic side. I just wanted to ask a question on single cell. I mean, you know, back when I was following the company, you know, at a prior firm, certainly Fluidigm was and still is synonymous with single cell. I mean, the opportunity for single cell is still tremendous. There's a lot of companies going after that market through a variety of ways. Just what does single cell mean today to Fluidigm?
For better or for worse, it's a much smaller portion of the company than it used to be when you were following the company. I mean, that's somewhat because of the new business that we acquired back in 2014. But it's a high single-digit percentage of the total company. But we are still a player there. We still have an installed base of about 300 C1 instruments. Those customers we continue to service. So where the landscape is right now is that the C1 technology is complementary to droplet-based high-throughput methods. And we've seen applications of high-throughput methods when PCR was nascent, when sequencing itself was nascent, that you have an initial stage where throughput is everything, you do a broad screen. But we do believe, because of the breadth of applications of the C1 and the sensitivity, the superior sensitivity that it offers, that for more targeted applications, that it will still be relevant. So it may, and we are still in a surveillance mode right now, but what it could turn out to be is that it would be complementary to a high-throughput application that are more based on droplets. So a couple of things that are happening in single-cell right now is that there are 2 or 3 initiatives around the world on so-called atlasing of the human, the human cell. So they're taking various systems, organ systems within the body, and atlasing them to determine cell heterogeneity and so forth. Those are largely high-throughput applications, but as we are winding down and going to the next phase of that, we are seeing the results of the high-throughput applications being used to do targeted applications using the C1. So that, I would say, is where the single-cell side of business is as far as Fluidigm is concerned. But we do have a very robust high-throughput genomics business.
Mm-hmm.
That has a value proposition that is as relevant today as when the microfluidics technologies was first launched in terms of scalability, throughput, and just the sheer cost effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that in our results on the high-throughput side, most recently in Q1.
Right. So I was gonna ask you, in terms of your genomics business, I mean, you've got a bunch of different platforms targeting, you know, several different application areas, but what's the... Maybe if you could, like, what excites you most about your genomic strategy? I'm sure it's hard to pick your favorite child, but maybe you can kind of, you know, walk us through a little bit of a roadmap on the genomic side as well.
Yeah. So what excites us most is just the sheer opportunity we have of leveraging of the value proposition. So, sorry, before I go there, there's two aspects of our genomics business. One is qPCR-based. We have the Biomark system that's real-time, and then we have an endpoint detector called the EP1.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect, PCR-based, and then the other one is next-generation sequencing library preparation. The legacy instrument was called the Access Array, and then we replaced that with the Juno.
Juno.
So they're two kind of distinct, but they're all microfluidics based. So what excites us most is the opportunity we have to develop content, either organically developed or licensed, like I mentioned, the Baylor Genetics CFTR assay. We also launched an immuno-oncology gene expression assay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the OEM partnership we have with Ascendus Genomics. So there's multiple opportunities on the table that we have to leverage these technologies, and we can mix and match based on the region that we are playing in and the application. The good news is that it has, as the value proposition is still very much intact. It's really hard to beat that, because of the geometry of the microfluidic chamber. You're just talking about reaction sizes in the nanoliters. So you can imagine you can get a lot more insight from a precious biological sample, and then by using a fraction of the expensive assays, to get the same kind of results.
Mm-hmm. And is there still, like, a missionary message on that front where... 'Cause, you know, some of these techniques, you know, on the sample prep side and the PCR side, certainly PCR is ubiquitous. Is there still a messaging that you need to go around? I mean, I know it's been out there for a while, your products, but nonetheless, I wonder, when you go speak to clients, that you've gotta, you know, you've gotta educate them on the savings that you could generate from a technology that has been in place for so long?
I would say, yeah. Surprisingly, that is the case, but it's not a hard message. It's not complicated. It's just a question of... And this is some of the things that when you say what's different after Chris joined the management team, and these are the types of things. We have calculators now.
Mm-hmm.
That we can put in front of customers. I mean, it sounds pretty basic.
Right.
But that was not in our ethos. So just giving a simple calculator to a customer and very quickly enables them to calculate the savings that they could implement from using a biomark, for example.
Mm-hmm. And on the NGS library prep side, just discuss what's the competitive landscape on that front. Like, what area within library prep do you fill? And is that area, you know, has your growth there and your profile been pretty consistent, or have you seen a lot of pressure from alternative technologies or players?
Yeah. So we had, before we had our own content, we had actually talked publicly about a very large HLA customer that was using the Access Array technology. This is in Dresden, Germany. They were using it for HLA screening. It's a very large customer, and we had other customers here in the United States on the prenatal side. But the change in focus that we have right now is to develop our own assays.
Mm-hmm.
And the CFTR panel is an example of that, where we not only have the hardware, but we also provide the assay. And in this case, it's a 27 exon assay that takes rare mutations and puts them in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be a significant development based on compared to the legacy CF assays. So I think that gives an insight as to what we would do in the future relative to library prep. People can still use the instrument as is and develop their own assays.
Yeah.
But here we are going to help them with some panels that they can just plug and play and just take it off right away.
Maybe a final question, since we're just about out of time, and maybe just on the balance sheet and cash flow. Can you just describe, I know Chris and yourself have been involved with a lot of operational efficiency changes to, you know, kind of maximize cash flow, and you've done something on the balance sheet. Where do you stand today in terms of kind of cash burn, and how should we think about the ability for Fluidigm to become self-funding at some point over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, like I said, we took about 15-16% off our OpEx. We made a significant reduction in our cash burn. And lately in March, we took our $200 million convertible debt. We took $150 million of that and pushed out the put date from 2021 to 2023 while still preserving the cash coupon.
Mm-hmm.
The cash burn, I think we have got well under control. But it's at a point we believe is rightly balanced between cost efficiencies and not sacrificing growth.
Okay. All right, great. With that, we're out of time. So, Vikram and Agnes, thank you very much for being here, and thank you for all being here as well.
Thank you,
Dan. Thanks, Dan.